You're listening to the Business Forum Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio, Liberated Syndication, iTunes, and multiple media channels connected to the TBFS radio network. This top-ranked business talk radio show features the obstacles and challenges that are common to business everywhere around the world. Most importantly, you'll connect with thousands of success stories on how business people overcame these hurdles on their road to success. For any business owner in our listening audience who's facing a particular problem or challenge that you've not been able to solve, you might be concerned about your future, or you're just not satisfied with the financial results in your company. Reach out to us here on the broadcast at info@thebusinessforumshow.com. We'll be happy to put you in touch with hundreds of resources that you may not have been aware are available to your business today, many of which are free. For those of you needing a professional level of assistance in your organization, many of the hosts on the broadcast also coach business owners outside of the show. We have visited with thousands of business people, seeing their struggles and challenges and their solutions to these problems. We have a clue what's working and what's not. So please don't hesitate to reach out to us today at info@thebusinessforumshow.com. On behalf of David Ford, Jeff O'Brien, and the TBFS radio staff, I'm Kevin Hunter. Stay tuned. The Business Forum Show is next. Is that the best you can do? Think about where you used this question last, and you'll probably say you were car shopping. Hi, I'm Kevin Hunter. As host of the Business Forum Show, I've heard countless stories of success and thousands of tragedies of failure. As I looked at the mental obstacles we put in our pathways by default, I thought about this question. Is that the best you can do? Why not ask it of ourselves? Wouldn't it change everything if we did? The answer is yes, so I wrote the book titled, Is That the Best You Can Do? I drew from the many experiences I've had with people who are clearly not doing their best, and of course, those who were. The difference lies in the mindset and the tactics. Is that the best you can do? It teaches you how to find success by design instead of failure by default. Is that the best you can do? Visit our Facebook page, Is That the Best You Can Do? And then find it on Kindle on Amazon and start changing your life today. I'm Kevin Hunter. Thanks for listening. Is that the best you can do? Think about where you used this question last, and you'll probably say you were car shopping. Hi, I'm Kevin Hunter. As host of the Business Forum Show, I've heard countless stories of success and thousands of tragedies of failure. As I looked at the mental obstacles we put in our pathways by default, I thought about this question. Is that the best you can do? Why not ask it of ourselves? Wouldn't it change everything if we did? The answer is yes, so I wrote the book titled, Is That the Best You Can Do? I drew from the many experiences I've had with people who are clearly not doing their best, and of course, those who were. The difference lies in the mindset and the tactics. Is that the best you can do? It teaches you how to find success by design instead of failure by default. Is that the best you can do? Visit our Facebook page, Is That the Best You Can Do? And then find it on Kindle on Amazon and start changing your life today. I'm Kevin Hunter. Thanks for listening. Kevin Hunter on the Business Forum Show. My guests in studio with me, Dia Johnson and Mike Niznik from Carlson Advisors. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you. Good morning.
So, Dia, you mentioned here that you've been in accounting for 20 plus years and counting. So, what turned you on about accounting, and what made you decide to get involved? Because a lot of people talk about the accountants as the people sit in these little dark rooms and add up numbers and spreadsheets and count beans. So, what's had you doing this for 20 plus years?
Sure. Well, I started out actually wanting to be an elementary school teacher. And my mom made me take an accounting class in high school. Everything clicked for me. I was a great instructor. So I ended up taking that all the way through college. Didn't change my major. Stayed with one major. Got out, and I've been in public accounting ever since. And the fun part about that is I'm actually teaching a lot of my clients right now. So I'm still doing what I knew I wanted to do, and that is teaching.
Mm-hmm. Well, very nice. How about you, Mike?
Actually, quite similar. I had a high school bookkeeping class, and for whatever reason, I got kind of turned on by it, and I stuck with it through college, didn't change. And I've been with it, you know, that's the only accounting I've ever done is public accounting. For me, it's a lot about the client relationships, and I never dreamed that my clients would become my friends, and I'd be so involved in them, and that's really what keeps me going.
Mm-hmm. So.
And what about, I'm sure over the last 20 years, you, both of you have had to see a ton of things change with regard to tax implications, regulations, whatever, as they impact business. So, Mike, I'll start with you. What have you seen in terms of big changes to business?
Well, it's just the number of changes. I mean, in the 80s and 90s, we'd get a tax law maybe once every 3 or 4 years that would have some impact. Now there's more than one a year. I mean, and it's difficult to keep up with that. Fortunately, we've got a lot of resources at Carlson Advisors. We're subscribed to a lot of different services, so we're getting daily emails, watching court cases, watching the changes, watching what's going on in Congress. That to me is the biggest change. Watching, you know, at one point high individual taxes, where now individual taxes are lower than corporate taxes, and most corporations don't pay tax. Most of them will be flow-through type entities where the tax is paid at the individual level.
Mm-hmm. So, how about you, Dia?
Well, I've seen a lot of companies from startup get larger and go through some of those growing pains.
Mm-hmm.
The industry out there is a little bit different. Banks are a little tighter, so we're a little more involved. Rather than just with taxes and financial statements, now we're involved with managing, helping our clients manage some of those transitions and manage their business.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the biggest thing I've seen as far as what we're doing as a profession with our clients.
For some organizations that don't have good accounting support in their organization, and this could be even true of larger companies who are doing a lot of stuff in-house, but one of the things that I hear about from business people, and it probably happens way too often, but they come to a point in their business where they're needing some financing, they're needing some bank help. And so they go to the bank to go talk to them about a loan. And of course, they don't have the right paperwork and whatnot that the bank is looking for. So talk about that and how big of a deal is it in taking an organization who really hasn't done a good job in that regard, and what do you have to do to get them prepared so they're actually, a bank is interested in talking to them based on the bookkeeping and the paperwork they're generating?
Sure. Well, you put together a package, and the package has to have enough information for the bank to feel comfortable that they're creditworthy,
mm-hmm.
That they have the cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
And that they have collateral. So those three things are what they're looking at. And when we help a client, it's our job to put that information into a story. We ask them to write up information about their history, where they're going, what their vision is. And then we put the numbers in there too, of course, the personal numbers and also the company numbers. It helps if they have a good relationship with their bank.
Mm-hmm.
Also in our world, it's a referral world. So we have lots of referral sources that we know bankers. So
sure.
we can bring some of that credibility if we're coming in to one of our current bankers, mm-hmm. to help them get that financing.
Go ahead.
The bank oftentimes will ask for a certain type of financial statement. The lowest level would be a compilation.
Mm-hmm.
The highest level would be an audit, depending on the size of the company, depending on the size of the loan. So it might go beyond the bookkeeping where they may want us involved to prepare such a financial statement that's kind of independently prepared that they can look at, not just the QuickBooks or the internal financial statements of the company.
Mm-hmm. A lot of well-known business experts have made the comment that there's a 3-5% chance that the change any organization will need, or that the things they need to do to move ahead in today's economy, that there's a 3-5% chance that that change will come from inside their organization. So without either using good consultants like yourself in the accounting area, or whether it's business coaching or attorney legal help and whatnot, they're going to need people from the outside to help them. Having said that, though, there's plenty of people out there on the accounting side that simply are just bookkeepers. And one of the things that you mentioned, Dia, was talking about educating your clients, which is a totally different breed of accountants than somebody who's just simply doing your books. I had, many years ago when I had a small business in Michigan, I had an accountant that was doing books for me too. And I had to almost on a monthly basis go back and say, hey, I'm looking for this type of information. I'm looking for that type of information. And, you know, his response back to me always was, well, you need to tell me what you need and then I'll get you what I need. And so later, as I became a little bit smarter about that whole process, I realized what a poor job he was actually doing for me. But I want you to visit about the things that you do to educate your clients in addition to just simply doing what people commonly call bookkeeping, because having a good accounting firm assisting and representing your organization is really important today, where years ago, maybe it didn't matter all that much. But talk about that, Dia.
Sure. One of the things that I do with my clients is I meet with them, depending upon the complexity of their business, usually it's quarterly. Mm-hmm. And we have lunch. It's informal. I ask how things are going. There's maybe key things that we're watching in the business, so mm-hmm. we always bring those things back up again. And that's the opportunity for them to tell me something new that's happening to them, mm-hmm. To get some advice. And it's also a time to build that relationship, to find out more about who they are and what they want out of their business and personally also. So that's the approach I take, is that I'm touching the client all year long. And internally, we do a lot of staying on top of the changes. We try to, we have a blog, so we try to send that out. We have a newsletter that we send out when there's something important to our clients. We try to put it in layman's terms so it isn't too techie. Mm-hmm. So we're always trying to stay in front of the client before they find out from someone else what's going on, and,
sure.
and then they're in trouble.
Sure. How do you, when you mentioned that there's, and Mike, I believe you touched on this, that in the 80s to 90s, there was a tax law once maybe every 3 years. Now it's 1 to 2 times a year. How do you get that kind of information out to people? Do you try to get in contact with everybody and have a seminar type thing, or how do you communicate this information as far as the changes that it represents to business?
Mostly we try to do that by a kind of an updated newsletter. Fortunately, our services actually make that real easy on us. They'll almost give you a hand-fed newsletter, and we just edit it accordingly. We've tried seminars, things like that, and clients don't seem to want to come to that. They just want us to know. Mm-hmm. They don't want to necessarily know it all either. They just expect us to know it and to take care of it for them.
Sure. Well, that makes sense. They don't expect to become the experts on it. They just want to rely on you for good advice as to how it impacts their business. Well, that makes sense. So what do you see coming as far as any significant things that business people should be aware of today? Anything new that they should know?
It's an ever-changing world. I mean, and especially with budget issues and so on. I mean, you know, there's a lot of talk now in the state, and I'm finding sales tax audits, for example, and I think our Department of Revenue in the state of Minnesota is geared up to audit just about everybody. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. And even some of us, like our firm, was actually audited by the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and we're a service provided organization. We don't pay sales tax. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to uncover just about every rock that they can to find money. So
I suppose with money being tight everywhere, they're trying to turn over every rock they possibly can. Are you experiencing that as well, Dia?
Yes, both the state and the federal, I think, are much more aggressive. They're looking at things a little more carefully. Mm-hmm. I filed a tax return that in Minnesota that had research and development credits on it, and my clients haven't received their refunds yet. Mm-hmm. And we filed them on time. And we call the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and they say, well, we're just looking at the R&D credit. So they're just looking over everything a little more carefully. Yeah. So everything has to be documented a little better up front and on our end.
And back when we used to experience audited, everything started with the federal. And the state would follow up, but now the state is the aggressor as compared to the federal.
Sure. So roles have kind of changed there.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Kevin Hunter on the Business Forum Show. My guests are Dia Johnson and Mike Nisnik from Carlson Advisors. You can find them on the web at carlson-advisors.com. Again, that's carlson-advisors.com. You can also contact the office at 763-535-8150. Again, 763-535-8150. Kevin Hunter on the Business Forum Show. My guest is Dia Johnson and Mike Nisnik from Carlson Advisors. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay tuned. On the Business Forum Show, we know that succeeding in business is difficult. You see, we understand that every year, 1 million-plus people start a business venture of some sort. 96% of them will not see a 10-year anniversary. But that said, we also know that running a successful business isn't impossible. Every day, we talk to business people from every walk of life and any type of business imaginable. We witness the hard work, sweat, and tears that business owners invest in their journey to success. And we've seen incredible odds overcome by the most unlikely owners. Can we help you tell your story? Become a guest on the Business Forum Show. Go to our website, thebusinessforumshow.com, and click on the link for request an interview. Take 5 minutes out of your day and fill out the brief company outline right on our site. We take care of the rest. All guest appearances are free, so there's no cost to worry about. Thebusinessforumshow.com. Be our guest and contact us today. Welcome back to the Business Forum Show. I'm Kevin Hunter. My guests are Dia Johnson and Mike Nisnik from Carlson Advisors. And I wanted to have a little conversation about entity structuring. What's appropriate for a given type of business? There are many different entities you possibly could have. So I was wondering if you wouldn't mind sharing some stories of some organizations that have a specific entity type, why that was appropriate for them, and maybe what some of their products and services are, just for some examples.
I'd say a lot of it depends on what the client or the taxpayer wants. I mean, probably one of the most popular entity structures right now is called the LLC, mm-hmm. or limited liability company. And I think a lot of people, when they hear that, you can ask them and say, what does LLC mean? And they'll say limited liability corporation, and it's not a corporation. You can elect to become a corporation, but most of the time I like to at least start people out as an LLC, because I think there's a lot more flexibility. Assuming a business in its first couple of years is probably not going to be profitable. Mm-hmm. They're going to struggle to make money, so on and so forth. If it's a single owner, the owner may not have to file a separate tax return. There's a concept called the disregarded entity. And so if, let's say, it's a service-provided organization and it's just one owner, he would just file that as if he's a sole proprietor and include that on his personal return. There's advantages and disadvantages. The disadvantages, all of that is subject to his income tax, also what's known as self-employment tax. Most business owners probably know what that is. But the ease of it is he doesn't have to do a separate tax return for the entity. He can take money out, draws. All of his money that's available to him is already been taxed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once you get beyond those kind of loser years, for lack of a better way to, you become profitable, it might make more sense then to elect S Corp, which is a corporation. And you can actually do that without actually incorporating. There's what they call the check the box regulations, and you just make that change. So legally you're still an LLC, but you elect to be taxed as an S corporation. And a lot of that's the same operation, but now you've created a couple of things. You now have to do a separate tax return for your corporation. Mm-hmm. So you've got some administrative costs there. And it's a little tougher to get money out. Now you become an employer of your corporation. So you're going to have to take a paycheck. IRS actually watches that, because there's been games played historically in that S corporations just take distributions out, similar to what they did as an LLC.
Mm-hmm.
But now there's payroll taxes, and the IRS want those payroll taxes.
Sure.
So they're going to look for some sort of minimum salary to come out. Well, then you got payroll taxes, you got W-2s, you got quarterly payroll tax returns. So there's advantages, but there's also some other things you have to weigh, some additional costs that you have to weigh. So,
what about some other entity types, Dia?
Well, there's also the C corporation. Mm-hmm. We don't have too many of those, but what that is, it stands by itself. It's its own tax entity, so it pays its own tax on its income, versus an S corp where the income flows through and is picked up on the individual return. The one benefit to a C corp is similar to the sole proprietor, is that in the beginning years, when you don't have a lot of profit and what profit you do have is probably paying off debt.
Mm-hmm.
A C corp, the first $50,000 is only taxed at 15% federal. And so you're paying a pretty low tax to get started. And what we'll do with a lot of those C corps is we'll watch how that works and where the tax rates are. And at some point we'll flip that also to an S corp so they can start taking the distributions out along with their wages.
Mm-hmm. I have a little scenario that I wanted to run by you guys, and you can comment on this. I became aware of an organization, and when we're talking about, you know, the tax benefits of certain company types and entity structuring, there was an organization that was an American based firm. They opened up a Canadian subsidiary, and they put in a obviously completely separate management team and everything else to run the Canadian subsidiary. Well, these two organizations weren't communicating that well to each other, because the Canadian subsidiary developed American clients, and they opened up an American subsidiary of that organization. So long story short, without realizing it, there were cases where the parent company in the U.S. was shipping stuff to the Canadian entity, who then was shipping stuff to there. And by the time this all got done, well, that seems like a lot of nonsense and a lot of wasted time and everything else. But the other bigger issue here was that by the time goods traveled from U.S. to Canada, from Canada back to U.S. and to their client, and all the appropriate taxes were applied to all these transactions that took place, they were at about 70% of gross sales was what they were being taxed on. Have you ever seen such a situation or heard of such a situation happening?
I haven't heard of that. I'm a little familiar with the Canadian law. So I mean, basically a company pays tax on their worldwide income. So,
sure.
So they're going to pay U.S. tax, they're going to probably pay Canadian tax, and then the provincial taxes up in Canada are high as well. Mm-hmm. And then they're probably paying a state tax back here, depending on what state they're based in. So there should be some, well, if you're just talking income tax, but there might be value-added tax and things also that mm-hmm. that get exchanged in Canada that we don't have here. But there should be some kind of credits, at least if it's a domestic U.S. corporation. But again, if kind of the way you described it, it sounds like they started a Canadian corporation as well. So I'm not sure where the domicile was there. Maybe they never defined that.
I was my chief question in all of this as I was hearing this story unfold was, who are you talking to for advice? And obviously maybe nobody, but who was the organization talking to advice in this whole process? Because obviously that's a heck of a big mess to get into. And you know, having a pretty good size operation to do that. Are there any situations where you've seen companies, you know, create a entity structure that was inappropriate for them and put them into a tax base that was much higher than what they expected?
I have seen that. One of the other entity choices are if you have real estate, mm-hmm. it should be in an LLC. And again, if you're the only owner, you can keep it within your individual tax return. But if you're in there with multiple partners, there's a partnership return filed. Well, a lot of times people will put real estate inside of their corporation. Mm-hmm. And so what that does is most historically anyway, real estate has gone up in value. So you have an appreciated asset inside of a corporation. So you end up with an extra tax when you either distribute that out at fair market value or in a C corp, you'd have the double tax on the appreciation.
Ah, very cool. And Mike, how about you?
Yeah, Dia kind of mentioned earlier that a lot of our clients are S corporations or flow through type. We don't do that many C corps. Lots of times we'll get clients, and the first thing we'll do, a new client, is analyze, are you the appropriate entity structure? Mm-hmm. And by doing an analysis, okay, you're a C corp right now. And one of the biggest things we look at is the end game. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a double tax when you decide to get out. And if you do an analysis with an S corp, it's a much better answer. So lots of times we'll convert, and there is some effort that needs to be done there. But that's why a lot of our clients, we just don't leave them as a C corp, because there's many disadvantages.
Mm-hmm. For the people that are unfamiliar, Mike, you mentioned this, that a LLC is a limited liability company. For people that aren't familiar with the difference between just a company structure is versus a corporation, elaborate on that.
Well, one of the things that it seems to come up a lot is at your end with 1099 issuing. I think most business owners know you don't need to issue a 1099 to a corporation, where an LLC, there's a lot of confusion there. Mm-hmm. Let's take Carlson Advisors for an example. We're an LLC, and you should issue a 1099 to an LLC. Mm-hmm. And so we should get a 1099 from all of our clients. You know, we don't, because they think we're a corporation. So that's one of the areas. And a lot of it comes down to what I described before. How are you getting paid? There's benefits. Well, it's probably similar between LLC and corporation, but a lot of, what kind of tax returns should you be filing? A lot of things like that.
Mm-hmm. Dia, you have any thoughts you want to add to that?
Well, an LLC or a limited liability company is basically set up. It looks more like a partnership when you do the documentation, whereas a corporation actually has stock certificates. So mm-hmm. the base that starts out looks more like a corporation.
Well, we're just about out of time. In fact, the last minute or so here, but any parting shots as far as advice that you'd give to the many small business people that are opening up an organization today in today's market?
You know, one thing we talked about a little earlier is about bookkeeping. I think a lot of business owners just, especially with software right now availability, I don't think they need help with that.
Mm-hmm.
I would say you probably do, and you might save money mm-hmm. by getting some help with that initially and getting set up and off to the right foot.
Well, 96% of the million plus people that start a business every year do not see a 10-year anniversary, and one of the big mistakes they make is not getting good advice when it comes to their accounting and bookkeeping. Kevin Hunter on the Business Forum Show. My guests are Dia Johnson and Mike Nisnik from Carlson Advisors. You can find them on the web, carlson-advisors.com. You can also call them at 763-535-8150. Again, 763-535-8150. Kevin Hunter on the Business Forum Show. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to the Business Forum Show, broadcasting worldwide on Blog Talk Radio, Liberated Syndication, iTunes, and multiple media channels connected to the TBFS radio network. If you have any questions or comments for our staff, please reach out to us at info@thebusinessforumshow.com. On behalf of David Ford, Jeff O'Brien, and the TBFS radio staff, I'm Kevin Hunter. Thanks for listening.